जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यमुना तीरवनाचारी यमुना तीरवनाचारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यशोरा नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यमुना तीरवनाचारी यमुना तीरवनाचारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राज काचार्य स्तोत्र सत श्री श्रीमद His Divine Grace, Shilesi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada ki jai. Antaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Nitai go Premanande Hari Hari Bol Samavita Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. All grace to the assembled devotees. All grace to the assembled devotees. All grace to the assembled devotees. All grace to Sri Sri Guru Gauranga. Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim saraswatim vyasam tato jayam udiraye nashta prayeshu bhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavatyutama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishriki Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 20, Conversation between Maitreya and Vidura. Three verses today, right? 32, 33, 34. I'm going to back up a little bit before I start to give you some of the context here. So Maitreya is talking about the creation. Lord Brahma is creating different kinds of entities. And sometimes things don't turn out so well. He created some entities that wanted to have sex with him. And at first he laughed, like, what? What is this? And then he was like, oh, wait, they're serious. So he took shelter of the Lord. And the Lord said, well, just get rid of this body that's producing entities like this and get a different body. So he cast off that body that was attracting these entities, and it became the evening twilight. I think it's evening twilight, right? And that evening twilight, the demons saw it as a beautiful young girl, a beautiful, I guess you can say, adolescent girl, and they were very attracted to her. So that's the context of what we're reading today. There's a description of her, how beautiful she was. I won't read it, so we won't get attracted. And says, I'll just read it yesterday. Adorned with dark tresses, she hid herself, as it were, out of shyness. Upon seeing that girl, the asuras were all infatuated with an appetite for sex. So today, only the third verse has a purport by Srila Prabhupada. We can read this together, the first one. Aho rupam, aho dhairyam, aho rasya navambaya, bhajye kamaya mananam, akameva visarpati. The demons praised her. Oh, what a beauty! What rare self-control! What a budding youth! In the midst of us all who are passionately longing for her, she is moving about like one absolutely free from passion. Let's see the next one. Vitarkayanto bahudha tam sandhyam pramadakritim abhisambhavya sandhisthambhat paryach indulging in various speculations about the evening twilight, which appeared to them endowed with the form of a young woman, the wicked-minded asuras treated her with respect and fondly spoke to her as follows. So, ka hu asi are you? Kasya, belonging to whom? Asi are you? Ramporu, O pretty one. Literally, this means beautiful thighed one. Kaha, what? I always wonder because it comes up often in the Bhagavatam. I always wonder, how do they know what her thighs look like? A lot of times this comes up, actually. It's a pretty straightforward thing to say to a young lady, huh? Oh, beautiful thighed one. Okay. Things were different in those days, apparently. Kaha, what, va, or, artha, object, te, your, atra, here, bhamani, O passionate lady. Rupa, beauty, dravina, priceless. Panyena, with the commodity. Durbhagan, unfortunate, naha, us. Vibhadase, you tantalize. Kasi kasya siramporu. Kovartas tetrabhamini. उपाद्रवीन पन्येना धूर्भगानो विभाधसे काशिकस्यासि रम्भोरु को वार्तस्ते त्रभामिनी रूपद्रविण पन्येन धूर्भगानो विभाधसे काशिकस्य शिरम्भोरु तस्ते त्रभामिनी Translation. Who are you, O pretty girl? Whose wife or daughter are you? And what can be the object of your appearing before us? Why do you tantalize us, unfortunate as we are, with the priceless commodity of your beauty? Srila Prabhupada's purport. The mentality of the demons in being enamored by the false beauty of this material world is expressed herein. The demoniac can pay any price for the skin beauty of this material world. They work very hard all day and night, but the purpose of their hard work is to enjoy sex life. Sometimes they misrepresent themselves as karma yogis, not knowing the meaning of the word yoga. Yoga means to link up with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or to act in Krishna consciousness. A person who works very hard, no matter in what occupation, and who offers the result of the work to the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is called a karma yogi. Om jnanatimirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshuran militamena tasmai shri gurave namaha. So when we look back at the first verse here, a little something. She's described as Navam Vaya, new youth. Krishna has a name similar to that, because actually Krishna never crosses the stage into the, you know, the full youth. He's in the beginning of youth, it says. One time someone was describing, I know there was a temple in, well, probably still there in Madras, who had Parthasarathi temple, Krishna and Arjuna. And I think they had, if I remember correctly, Krishna had a mustache there. And devotees asked Prabhupada about it. And Prabhupada said, no, he has like, and he was trying to say, and devotee said, peach fuzz? And the Prabhupada said, yes, like that. little peach fuzz, as we say, you know, little hair starting to come in. So he's just young. So this is Nava. Nava, of course, means new. So budding, Nava Vaya, budding youth, a new youth. So she's young, actually. Of course, we see in the Bhagavatam, many places the girls are so beautiful, and they're like this age, like really young, like Rukmini. She was a very young girl. She was just, you know, 13 years old, maybe something like that. And you see these big kshatriyas falling off their horses because of her beauty. So this is considered to be such an extremely attractive time for boys, both boys and girls, when they're just in this budding youth. So Krishna just stays in that state. In fact, it says in Vaikuntha, everyone is like that. Even though they may, in some sense, appear at different ages, but they're also described as being like always youthful. Of course, they're not aging in the sense, of course, that they don't have material bodies. But everything looks very fresh. They don't get tired, they don't get sick, and so on. They don't have pimples. Of course, that's one thing with kids who are this age sometimes. They don't have very good complexions. But that doesn't happen, of course, in Vaikuntha. Everything is perfect there. So everything is new, fresh, beautiful, and it stays that way. It doesn't deteriorate. They don't lose their beauty. So let's see. I'll just go back. I'll go to the purport that we just read. So what I found really interesting here was, of course, Prabhupada is talking about the demons, and the demons, what do they want to do? They want to enjoy material life. Of course, not just the demons, but that's, you could say that's a demoniac tendency or propensity that we all have. Wanting to enjoy the material world is a demoniac, you know, part of the demoniac nature. So whether you're literally a demon or you're whatever you are, if you have this idea, it's against Krishna, of course. Instead of being attracted to Krishna, you're attracted to this material energy, which of course in a sense is also Krishna. In fact, that's sometimes, some places it's described that that's why we're attracted to the material world, because it's Krishna in a certain sense. It's Krishna's energy. So even that, which is called his inferior energy, even that is very attractive. But to want to enjoy it for oneself, that demoniac attitude, that's what's despicable. That's not encouraged. So Prabhupada says here, the mentality of the demons in being enamored by the false beauty of this material world is expressed herein. So of course it's false because it's temporary. The demoniac can pay any price for the skin beauty of this material world. So when I read this, I thought, well, Prabhupada, is he using it metaphorically? The material world is just skin, the beauty of the material world is just skin deep. You know, we have this expression, skin deep. So, or is he actually talking about how we're attracted to skin, in the sense of material bodies that are covered with skin? We're attracted to that. The demons, they can pay any price for the skin beauty of this material world. So that beauty, of course, it's so logical, actually, when you think about how, what illusion it is to be attracted to material bodies. When you think what's inside, it's just disgusting, actually, of course. We have this liquid beauty story that Prabhupada told, the lady who separated her beauty elements from her body in the form of vomit and stool and all of these things. So I think you're probably all familiar with that story. It's quite interesting, actually, when you think about the, you know, the story, because she was so beautiful. But then she removed all her beauty, and she was really ugly. But what is it? What was that beauty? It's just these horrible things. So the body is just covered with this skin to hide what's in there. I think about this in clothes sometimes, too. I think sometimes people have this idea that, well, I don't know if it's around so much, but of course we do have nudist colonies, but people think, ah, bee, it's so beautiful, we'll all be naked, you know. But most people don't want to be naked. They want to cover up. Well, we don't have perfect bodies, so it's better to keep it covered. And when it's cold, you can really keep it covered. So this skin is also a kind of covering, but what's it covering? What's the ugliness that's underneath that skin? It's really disgusting, actually. It's so disgusting when, you know, people faint when they see what's in there. Right? Somebody cuts themselves or they're in an accident and they, you know, the insides are coming out. It's so shocking. But still we think, oh, look how beautiful. Oh, get on the cover of Vogue magazine with this beauty, you know. But take off that layer of skin and see what's inside. So I'm saying this because it shows that we're an illusion in this material world. I mean, we're all crazy, actually. We're all crazy because we're thinking this is beautiful, but how is it beautiful? It's just skin. Even, I don't know if the expression is around anymore, where you say, give me some skin, right? People, they clap hands. Hey, give me some skin. You know? But who wants skin, actually? Give you a handful of skin and see how much you like it. But we think it's so wonderful. So this illusion is there. So Prabhupada says they work hard day and night for that, just to enjoy sex life. This, of course, is also stated by Shukadeva Goswami when he begins his talk at the beginning of the second canto. The first thing he does is say all the householders are in Maya, basically is what he said. That's his first teaching. Of course, most people are householders, and what do they want to do? They want to enjoy this material world. So they work hard all day, to enjoy, and then at night they enjoy in two ways, either by sleeping or having sex. That's their lives. Even now we see people work so hard. One thing I've been noticing over the years, it seems like there's a lot, like I go to, you know, the grocery store and I say, boy, it seems like a lot of new cars here. A lot of people seem to have shiny new cars. You don't see old beat up junk so much anymore. So I think people are working hard to get those shiny new cars, these huge, you know, SUVs and huge pickup trucks. You know, you probably can't even get a, you need a stepladder to get into the door practically to drive the thing. So they pay a lot of money for these cars. And what do they, they're working all day long just so they can do it. And also for their houses, of course, everyone is in debt. They're trying to enjoy. Everyone's at work. Except the dog. The dog's home enjoying in the living room. But everyone else is out working hard. So that's material life. That's what it's about. So then probably kind of shifts gears here. He's talking on this kind of tack here. Then he says, sometimes they misrepresent themselves as karma yogis. So they're just karmis, but they say, no, I'm a karma yogi. So as soon as I read this, I think, well, this must be, you know, Indian men who maybe read Bhagavad Gita, and they want to be spiritual. They think it's spiritual. Just like today, so many people have some vague idea what it means to be spiritual. So in the context of Bhagavad Gita also, people, they misread it. They think being spiritual, I'm a karma yogi just because I'm going to work every day in the factory and bringing money home so my wife can spend it. Therefore, that's karma yoga. So Prabhupada said, actually this, I might read a little of it. Prabhupada wrote this, it's kind of an extended essay, I guess, or a short book before ISKCON. called The Message of Godhead. Some of you may be familiar with it. It only has two chapters. First chapter is Jnana Yoga, and the second chapter is Karma Yoga. So he makes the same point in that book also. There are those, they're just ordinary karmis, but they want to say, yeah, I'm practicing Karma Yoga. You know, this some great thing that they're doing by just, you know, working so hard every day to make money. So then he says, actually, sometimes they misrepresent themselves as karma yogis, not knowing the meaning of the word yoga. So, well, just like today, so many people don't know what the word yoga is. Only the Hare Krishnas will tell you what it means. It means to connect. It means to connect with God, to engage. We have a related word in the Guru Vashtakam. Yuktasya bhaktangs janayun jatopi. Yukta is also it's related to this. Yukta yoga. What is the meaning of this verse? The spiritual master engages in deity worship and engages his disciples in deity worship. Make that connection. Put the gears together. We have to mesh the gears of our life with Krishna consciousness. So yoga means you have to make some connection with Krishna, not that you just go to work every day and try to make a lot of money so you can have sense gratification. Yoga, so Prabhupada says, yoga means to link up with the Supreme Personality of Godhead or to act in Krishna consciousness, which is the same thing, right? To link up with Krishna, to act in Krishna consciousness. A person who works very hard, no matter in what occupation, and who offers a result of the work in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is called a karma yogi. Now this idea of karma yogi or karma yoga, it can be a little difficult to understand, actually. At least I find it to be. What exactly is a karma yogi? I think there, even in the outside world, people have different ideas, those who, you know, especially from India, what does it mean to be a karma yogi? So in Bhagavad Gita, in the beginning, Krishna, he's talking about, you know, in the second chapter, Krishna's talking about transcendental things. You might say, basically, he's giving jnana. He's giving transcendental knowledge. You're not this body. He's talking about transcendence and spirit. So this is jnana, that knowledge. Things have to begin. Spiritual life begins with some jnana. You have to have some understanding. Otherwise, why take up the practices of any kind of yoga? So jnana yoga, now I don't know exactly what jnana yogas do with their lives all day long. I know they read the Shastra a lot, and they do some kind of, they sit around and discuss and philosophize, I suppose. And part of it seems to be Ashtanga yoga is connected to it. They also do some meditation, or at least it's supposed to bring you to that stage. Jnana yoga then brings you to meditation. So jnana means philosophical discussion. So when Krishna is speaking about jnana to Arjuna, then he tells Arjuna to fight. So, you know, Arjuna asks, well, what do you want me to do? You want me to sit around and philosophize all day, or do you want me to fight? I don't understand what you want me to do. So then, of course, Krishna says, actually, they're both the same thing. The result is the same. The result is that you're supposed to, of course, connect with Krishna. That's the whole point. And, of course, ultimately, it leads to Krishna consciousness. So in one sense, karma yoga is a stage where you're just doing your ordinary life, but you're trying to make some connection with Krishna. But throughout Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada, he just categorizes it as Krishna consciousness, basically. As you might say, it's under the umbrella of Krishna consciousness, karma yoga. It's distinguished from what we might call, you know, Navavida Bhakti, the nine kinds of devotional service, hearing, chanting, remembering, and so on. Because you're not, there's a difference between when you're chanting your rounds and when you're going to work, right? You're doing some ordinary job. There's some distinction there between those two things. In fact, in the fifth canto, in the commentary on that Rishabhdev's teaching, Srila Prabhupada makes this point. He says that one should do one's work to make money so that one can live to hear, chant, remember, in other words, to execute the nine processes of devotional service. So even though in one sense we can say that my job is, you know, it's also devotional service, It is, in one sense, but it's not the same as chanting your rounds, exactly, right? I mean, I think we all know that intuitively. But still, we do elevate our work because we connect it to Krishna. So this is, Prabhupada talks about karma yoga in this sense. Actually, I'll pull this out now. I wanted to read a little something from this message of Godhead. This is the first time I've ever had a computer in Bhagavatam class. I'm new to this game. Let's see if it's in the Veda base. Veda base is my life, actually. Couldn't live without it. My editing and class preparation. So let me. So this is Message of Godhead. So this is the second chapter about karma yoga. I'm skipping a little bit in the beginning, but I want to lead up to what Prabhupada says. So he says, factually, in no country other than India have the great sages endeavored so much for the realization of the spirit self. So just before this, Prabhupada is explaining that we're spiritual beings and so on. It is admitted that in the Western countries, the people have done their best to advance in the culture of material science, centered on the material body and mind. But it is admitted also that notwithstanding all such advancement of material knowledge in the West, the people in general there are suffering the pangs of the poisonous effects of materialism because they have cared very little for the culture of spiritual science. Great thinkers in the Western countries must therefore look to the people of India if the message of Godhead, of genuine spiritualism, is to reach their ears. Therefore, I went a little too far here. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, has elaborately discussed karma yoga, work with transcendental results, to douse the fire of materialism and brighten the future of humankind. Now, part of the context here is that, because even sometimes people come to Krishna consciousness, they hear the philosophy and they say, well, I'm not this body, I don't have anything to do with this world, so I should just give it all up. Right? And of course, people did that traditionally. Just go off to the Himalayas. What? I have nothing to do with this world. I think of that myself as in the context of these different kinds of holidays that we have in America. I think, I don't really want to have anything to do with that American culture. I'm trying to get my mind out of that. I'm not an American. I have nothing to do with these things. So that, you know, this idea is that I have nothing to do with this body or this material world, so I'm just going to leave it all. So this is like, I mean, jnana yoga really is about that. That's why Arjuna had this question. Is that what you want me to do? You're talking about spirit, and I'm not this body. So am I just supposed to go to the Himalayas, become, you know, a yogi like that? But most people aren't going to do that. So there's a side that may think, well, my life is useless. I'm just a useless person. I have to go to work every day and so on. I have to do all these things. So I can't go off to the Himalayas. So how can I be spiritual? So that's what karma yoga is about. You be spiritual by doing your karma, right? Karma means, or your dharma. These words are used kind of synonymously because karma means action. Krishna tells Arjuna in the third chapter in answering his doubt. No, everyone has to work. You have to work just to stay alive. But make it karma yoga, not just karma. So here, let me go back to this. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, Sri Krishna, the personality of God, has elaborately discussed karma yoga, work with transcendental results. So like a half a dozen times or so in this book, this short book, whenever the word karma yoga comes up, Prabhupada says, karma yoga, work with transcendental results. That's the way he defines it repeatedly in this particular essay. Work with transcendental results. Otherwise, you don't get transcendental results. You get your Benjamins, right? You get your money with Benjamin Franklin on the cover, on the front. So that's not a transcendental result. That's a material result, the money that you get. So how to make a transcendental result? That's karma yoga. So Krishna has elaborately described karma yoga, work with transcendental results, to douse the fire of materialism and brighten the future of humankind. There's a great difference between work for material gain and work with transcendental results. In many places throughout the Bhagavad Gita, the personality of Godhead mentions buddhi yoga. Now that's another word that has different meanings, apparently, as Prabhupada uses it in the Gita, or writes about it. So Krishna mentions buddhi yoga, or intelligence with transcendental results. So there's work. Karma yoga is work with transcendental results, and buddhi yoga is intelligence with transcendental results. And by this word, buddhi yoga, we can also understand transcendental devotional activities. For the person, in other words, you know, to understand, you might say, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, that's buddhi yoga. You're using your intelligence to understand, as Prabhupada says here, transcendental devotional activities. For the personality of Godhead says that he always favors his devotees by endowing them with the intelligence to perform devotional activities. So what is Prabhupada referring to here? Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. I give them the intelligence by which they come to me. So Prabhupada says, the personality of Godhead says that he always favors his devotees by endowing them with the intelligence to perform devotional activities, so that at the end the devotees may attain to him. In other places also it is said that God is attainable only through devotional activities. We can get rid of the results of our work only by the intelligent process of work with transcendental results. So it's nice the way Prabhupada is tying these two together. Buddhi yoga. You use your buddhi to understand that you can perform karma. That's not just karma, but karma yoga. In other words, you can act. So here Prabhupada he talks about the transition Krishna makes in the Gita. In the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna advises as follows. Thus far I have explained to you about transcendental knowledge. Now I shall explain to you about work with transcendental results. By this work with transcendental results, you can get rid of the bondage of ordinary work. In this process, there is no loss or diminution. Even if very little of this work is done, it can save one from the greatest trouble. It doesn't mean you don't do much work. It means even if you give, in some way, you're connecting with your work with Krishna. This work means karma yoga. He's referring to naha bikramanashosi patyavayana vidyate swapam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahatobayat. Even a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. So Prabhupada is explaining that verse in the context of this here. Even if very little of this work, in other words, practice of karma yoga, is done, it can save one from great trouble. Pure devotional activities are of one variety only, and how these devotional activities can be coordinated with our daily active life has been explained in Bhagavad Gita. Coordinating such devotional activities with our daily activities is technically known as karma yoga. So here Prabhupada is giving a technical definition of what karma yoga is. Coordinating devotional activities with our daily activities. Technically known as karma yoga. The same devotional activities, when mixed with the culture of knowledge, are technically called jnana yoga. But when such devotional activities transcend the limits of all such work or mental knowledge, this state of affairs is called pure transcendental devotion or bhakti yoga. So it seems like Prabhupada's talking about devotional service, but still, he's making this kind of a distinction here. There's jnana yoga, which is under the umbrella of bhakti, and there's karma yoga, but then there's bhakti yoga. So we, of course, we're very fond of bhakti yoga. We want to practice bhakti yoga, and we have occupations. Then we make those karma yoga under bhakti yoga. Of course, the nice thing about bhakti yoga is that you can do it. You don't have, it's not that one eliminates the other. If you're going to work, you can still chant Hare Krishna at work, right? You can still take prasadam at lunchtime. You can still have a picture of Krishna there to smadaram, Krishna smaranam. There are so many ways you can inject in the 9 processes of devotional service, at least the first few, even into your ordinary work life. So that's, of course, why we tend to think that this is, you know, this is really Krishna consciousness. How can I make my workplace more Krishna conscious? But the idea of karma yoga is you connect with Krishna. Of course, how do you do it, really? The main thing that's stated in Bhagavad Gita, you give the results of your work. In fact, I was reading commentary by Baladev Vidyabhushan and Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur on the Gita. They tend to talk in a more technical way about these different types of yoga. So there, Baladev Vidyabhushan, in the early chapters of the Gita, he says that the ingredients of karma yoga are that you give the result of your work and you get rid of the conception that I'm this body and everything belonging, you know, I, me, mine mentality. That's part of karma yoga. Not only do you give something, but you're also supposed to have this kind of inner meditation that I'm not this body, there's a temporary life and so on. I'm living in the material world. I'm active in the material world, but I'm actually not part of it. That should be part of the meditation for doing karma yoga correctly. So, of course, to do that, it helps to be very strong in our primary devotional practices, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu. So especially Kirtan. Kirtan is chanting the Lord's holy names. That's the of all the processes, that one's considered to be the most important. In one sense, the hearing is most important in a certain way, because if you haven't heard, then you won't chant. You have to hear the Maha Mantra. You have to hear the philosophy. So that gets things started. But still, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says chanting is the most important. The acharyas of all, of course, reiterated that statement. The chanting is the most important. That's that becomes the foundation of everything that we do, chanting the holy name. And we're meant to increase our chanting. We're supposed to chant, try to chant all the time, make it so it's a reflexive thing. I can say at least one thing that I've developed over the years is that if I stub my toe, then I say Krishna's name. At least that comes out spontaneously in a certain sense. So, because chanting, I find it difficult to chant a lot of rounds, like, some devotees, you know, they chant a lot of rounds, but I try to always, whenever I'm between things, walking, you know, from my room to the kitchen or whatever, always singing the Maha Mantra. I at least tend to try to do that. So we somehow or other, we should try to increase. Of course, we're also encouraged to increase the chanting of the holy name, you know, the amount of japa that we do. I know Bhaktivedanta Maharaj, he kind of jokes, if you follow some of his classes and courses. He says the rule is, Prabhupada would say, minimum 16 rounds. And Bhaktivedanta Maharaj, he says, for most of us, it's maximum 16 rounds. We think, okay, that's the end. You know, I've reached the finish line. I got my 16 done. And then I put my beads down and that's it. But sometimes, or even as a practice, to add to that, to increase our number of rounds at the minimum. But of course, at least that has to be done. Now we find it interesting that Prabhupada, he would talk about, it's not so difficult, it's not difficult. What's it difficult? It doesn't take very much time. But we Kali Yuga products, it is difficult, right? Even to do that, even to chant for 2 hours, it's difficult. I was thinking, I don't know why I thought of it in the context of this verse, but I was thinking, why do practicing devotees not get initiated? I was just writing an essay the other day, actually, for BTG, one of my editorials, and I was talking about I wrote about the first 6 principles in Bhakti Yoga, given the practice of Bhakti Yoga, given in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So right away it says one has to accept the spiritual master and take initiation from him. And then all the rest of the 64 rules of devotional service carry on from there. But many devotees, they go for many years. Now, I can't judge what's going on in people's lives, but I was trying to think, I wonder what it is exactly. Is it because they can't chant 16 rounds? Because we have these vows Prabhupada asks us to take. And for many people, apparently it's difficult. You know, chanting 16 rounds, I can't do it, I'm working, and this or that, or I just can't. It's just hard for me to chant. Or, of course, then there's also the regulatory principles. Maybe, of course, here talking about, you know, the topic is somewhat related to sex, so especially the one regulative principle is difficult for many people. So that may be a impediment to taking initiation. Or maybe also there may be some, now I don't know, because I don't talk to devotees. It's really a personal thing to talk to someone about. But I suppose, you know, part of it may also be I just don't feel, I don't see anyone as my guru, right? I wish Prabhupada was my guru. But so what to say about that? I really don't know. I guess all you can say is just encourage people, okay, just keep going. But it is true that it's a fundamental principle of our practice of devotional service. That you have to have a guru, and of course, having a guru in ISKCON means you chant 16 rounds, at least chant 16 rounds a day. It's so important. Prabhupada really didn't have any patience, you can say, for those who said they couldn't do it, or for those who said they couldn't follow the regulative principles after they'd made the vows. He didn't really, couldn't relate to it, you might say. Actually, Prabhupada expected a lot. I've been reading Bhurijan Prabhu's book, his memoirs, and it's an amazing story, actually. He had quite a bit of association with Prabhupada. But I'll give you an example. He was preaching, he and his wife, early in his Krishna consciousness, he went overseas to open temples because Prabhupada was encouraging everyone. Prabhupada liked, and he expected his disciples to be able to do it, go off to some foreign country and just start a temple there, even if you have to do it alone. And so Bhurijan and his wife were trying to do that, and they spent a few years, early in their years in Krishna consciousness. And after a while, they weren't having any success there. They were in Hong Kong, and it's a very materialistic place. The Hindus there are all just into making money, and the natives, they're not interested, they're completely materialistic. So they weren't really making much progress there. So they just couldn't handle it after a while. And then they left, actually. They closed the center down, and Prabhupada was not happy about that. Even though it was like, Prabhupada, you know, it's too hard, we just can't do it. We don't have the strength to do it. But he didn't really show much sympathy for it. He expected devotees to be strong, actually. You should be strong. You chant your rounds. You follow the regulative principles. You pray to Krishna. And then Krishna will empower you to do these things. And just this idea, you know, you go to some far-off place by yourself, no association. They had practically no association for 2 or 3 years. So it was really a difficult thing. But actually one thing, Bhurijan, he tells these different little anecdotes, and then he gives a little commentary on it. And he said, I can see looking back that Prabhupada had more faith in my ability to do it than I did. And he said, you know, he's either said or he's implying that means I could have done it if I had had more faith in Prabhupada, basically. Prabhupada had faith in me, so I should have had faith in Prabhupada that I was able to do it. So anyway, my point is, yes, there are challenges in Krishna consciousness. You know, there's this famous letter where there was this idea that put all of ISKCON under one big umbrella. Basically, all the money goes into one fund, you know, and then it's distributed out to the different centers. And Prabhupada was completely against that idea. He nipped it in the bud. He said, no. He said, Krishna consciousness. He said, I like every center, the devotees should be struggling there. Actually, Bhaktisiddhanta had this philosophy, too. He would spend the money quickly, and then the devotees would have to go out and make more money, because they always had this pressure to do a kind of service. So Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness must always remain a challenge that the devotee undertakes willingly to advance in Krishna consciousness or please Krishna. That's part and parcel of devotional service, is that, yes, it's a war against Maya, as Prabhupada would say. But we're enlisting voluntarily. Yes, okay, I know. In fact, that's the first six principles of devotional service, that one has to have the attitude that there may be some difficulty in serving Krishna, but I'm going to do it, whatever is necessary to please Krishna. I may have to accept things that I don't like, and I may have to do things that I don't like. Why? Because I'm trying to become Krishna conscious. So of course, how do we increase our strength? We do it by chanting. And the chanting, of course, has to be regulated. This is a very important point. Of course, even for devotees who are not initiated, they should have some set thing every day. Rupa Goswami says we cure the jaundice of our disease and materialism by devotional practices anudinam, which means day after day after day after day, not just when I feel like it, in a regulated way. So our chanting also should be like that. We shouldn't, for example, come to the festival once a year to chant a lot of hours and then not chant the rest of the year. I don't know if anyone does that, but at least not a serious devotee. But no, it has to be a regulated every day. The Goswamis also, Sankhya Purva Kanama Ganinati B. Even Lord Chaitanya chanted, on B. We didn't chant on B's actually, he chanted on a knotted string. I thought of that. I wonder when we started chanting on Tulsi beads, what the history of that is. I don't know, because Tulsi beads aren't mentioned in the Bhagavatam, as far as I know. I think Rudraksha beads might be mentioned somewhere. I'm pretty sure they are. Any case, so my point is that our chanting is so important to us. We have to, it's the foundation. If we want to get some enthusiasm, things become easy when you're enthusiastic and inspired. So unless we chant regularly, that inspiration isn't going to come. It comes from being in contact with Krishna through serving him and serving the guru. And the guru also, the guru and his grace. There's a book like that. I think it's by Sridhar Maharaj. The guru and his grace. We want to get the grace of the guru. If you're getting grace, then you become inspired. You can do so many wonderful things. All right, I guess I kind of wandered off the topic here a little bit, but I didn't want to just talk about sex for 20 minutes. you prepare a class and you look and it's about sex. Oh, I don't know. All right, so I'll just read the, just for the point of it, the last verse. Kasi kasyasi rambhuru kovartaste trabhamini rupa dravina panyena durbhagan no vibhadhase. Who are you, O pretty girl? Whose wife or daughter are you? And what can be the object of your appearing before us? Why do you tantalize us, unfortunate as we are, with the priceless commodity of your beauty? So we're all being tantalized in one way or another, whether it's a beautiful girl or something else, and we need help. So anyone like to add something or subtract something?
I remember reading Shaili Purna, the disciple of guru of Ramanujacharya. He commented on this Partha Sarathi in Kanchipur.
Uh-huh.
He says that there was a family gathering, and in the family gathering, Mother Rukmini, Krishna's wife, noticed that even the granddaughter fell in love with Krishna because Krishna always looks so attractive pure that it was difficult for her to just sit down next to him and just seeing everybody's in love with him. There should be some age gradation. So she went inside her beauty parlor and brought a mascara and put some paint on his mascara. So he looks like a little grandfather.
He looks a little older.
That's how that deity manifested.
Oh, I see. Interesting.
Just to differentiate the age, he's a grandfather.
All right, if there's nothing else, we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.